All right, guys, welcome to the show. This is End of the Apocalypse. We're coming at you from the Deborah Gets Redfield RSS feed. I think this is our 151st episode.
Ooh.
On that feed. So I'm here with Chud X. How's it going, dude?
It's going pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going well here, too. It's finally starting to cool down a little bit, and it's nice. So
it's been smoky as hell here for a few days. Got a little better yesterday. I think it's going to be better today, but it kind of blends with fog in the morning. We'll see if it lifts the smoke out with it today or not.
Yeah, there's a bunch of fires in Oregon, kind of east of Portland. And I don't know where all the other stuff is, but all over the area. So,
yeah.
I woke up Saturday morning, and I think it was supposed to be like 96 degrees. So I was like, all right, I'm going to get up and try to do all the work I got to do on my house is on the south side. So it's like 80 degrees, but it's like 105 degrees out there when you're working, you know?
Sure.
And so I was like, all right, I got to get up and get this done. And then just that inversion layer set in. It was like orange outside. And I don't watch the news or pay attention to anything. And I was like, I wonder what's going on. It was like orange. And so the sun never was able to get through that inversion layer. I think the moisture and I know a little bit about it because I used to fight fires. So what happens is like the moisture comes in at night, and if it's smoky, it holds that smoke down. So it'll either hold the heat, it like holds the temperature in at night, but also in the day, it doesn't let it, it's like a little shell that doesn't let more get in. Yeah. And what happens is like, you'll see if you've ever, they used to show us in the Forest Service in training, like these sped up videos of what happens when the inversion layer lifts. So it's like at 11 o'clock every day, that moisture would start disappearing and the smoke would rise, and then the fire would just kick up and start going again.
Oh, okay. That all makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and then at nighttime, that inversion layer comes in, especially in coastal areas, and the fire dies down at night. It's still going, but active fire will start at like 11.
Once that lifts and oxygen comes back in and just starts fueling it all over again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes plenty of sense for the patterns that I see around here.
But yeah, but other than that, everything's all good. I'm getting a bunch of stuff done on the homestead. I built a addition onto the chicken coop yesterday.
Sweet.
So yeah, because we got these five new pullets like a couple months ago, and they were all sleeping in they found out how to get into the coop right away, but they started sleeping in the nesting boxes.
So the
nesting boxes are full of chicken shit, and I wanted to get them out of that habit. So I built I cut a hole in the side of the chicken coop and built another little addition for them, put two roosting bars in there. And then I just cut a piece of plywood or strand board and put it over the, where the nesting boxes are in the back at nighttime so that they couldn't go in there. And I looked in at night and they were all in there roosting.
They're going to go where that's much more comfortable for them. I imagine being on a roosting bar than in a box. They were just kind of, I don't know where else to go, I'm sure.
Yeah. And they were all like, there's five of them. So the two black ones were stuffed in one, and then the three red ones were stuffed in one. They're racists. They stick together.
Goddamn like racist said. Chickens. But
yeah, so I got that going. And do you remember how on my on the porch, the kitchen porch, the flooring was like all that old strand board that was painted brown?
Yeah.
Yeah, I tore out the whole wall in the front of the porch, and then I pulled all that up, and I was like, man, I got to pull this up. I'm really scared about what I'm going to find. You know, but it's going to open a whole can of worms. And like underneath, it's like just like this beautiful original tongue and groove porch boards.
Oh, no shit.
It's not perfect. Some of it's like rotted out and stuff, but it's
something you can work with.
It's so stupid. Like instead of like going and buying some new boards when the old ones got rotten and replacing them, they just covered it with plywood.
With that glued together stuff.
Yeah, what's it called? It's not MDF, it's OBS.
OBS. MDF is medium density.
Yeah, OBS is OSB.
Oh yeah, OSB. There it is. Yeah,
Something
yeah.
strand board.
Yep.
Which works great for what it's supposed to be for, you know? Like lining a house and then putting stuff over it, but it's not.
It's not what you want to look at.
But at Emily's work, they make tiles with like grooves and tongue and groove tiles, like 2x2 tiles, and people use them on floors, and you can clear coat them, and it actually doesn't look bad
Huh, that could be kind of
for
cool.
like an industrial type setting, you know?
Yeah, if you want to be able to just like sweep and scrub your floor.
Yeah, like I was
Yeah.
thinking about doing it in the mudroom. But yeah, it was cool. I built that. I used that OBS as the wall. That's what I built the chicken coop addition out of. So
Yeah.
yeah. So
Well,
I want to
we've had a
hear
major change over here.
what's going on.
I almost said his name. Our 8-year-old, he started school last week.
Yeah, not
Yeah, we
school
sent
school,
him off to school. He's in the public school system now. We're leaving him over to him. We have nothing to do with him anymore. We'll see how he turns out.
That's great. I was judging you. I didn't think that he was progressing at the proper rate, and I was wondering when you guys were gonna recognize that and throw him in there.
It's a homeschool collective, 4 days a week for a few hours a day. He's pretty stoked on it. I wasn't that stoked on it at first, but now that he's done it a few days, it's exactly what he wants, and thereby I would say exactly what he needs. Because
Other kids.
as you've met him, he likes to talk. He's
Yeah.
got some things to say, and I spend a lot of time just nodding my head and listening and hearing what he has to say. It takes a long time to say anything, and that's fine. He's 8; you expect that. But now he's spending several hours, 4 days a week, with other kids who I'm imagining aren't quite as polite as me. They're not going
Yeah.
to sit and listen to him as much, and it's plenty of interaction. He's not feeling butthurt because he's not talking. It's just they push their thing in with him. I politely sit and wait because I don't have anything to respond, a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems pretty cool. It's a cool collective. We're familiar with all the leaders of the teachers of the school, and it's very unschooling kind of stuff. It's just keep the kids together. We'll go outside and look at leaves for a while, and then we come back in and do something else. They just kind of have a plan every day, and they keep everybody moving at the same rate. And it's a wide variety of ages, so it's not, oh, the older kids do this and the younger kids do that kind of stuff. They're just doing everything together all the
Yeah,
time.
I haven't really looked into why that's supposed to be good, but everything I've heard is that that's supposed to be good.
Oh yeah, I think it is. Like without even like looking into it, it's just all kids learn differently. That's something I learned when I was still in school. Some kids are quicker at one thing and slower at another thing, and then vice versa for the other kid. So having everybody kind of work on everything at the same time gives the chance that whether you're old or young, if you understand it, you start teaching it to the other kids. You start helping them understand it. You try to bring everybody up to your level. Whereas when it's grade by grade, you're forced like, no, we're doing addition today. We're learning addition. That's the math that we're learning. And someone else is going, well, I don't need to do addition. I figured out how to do this using multiplication. And it's like, get out of here.
Yeah.
Show me your work that you know how to do addition for a year, and then we'll talk about multiplication next year.
Yeah.
So it should be good.
And
Not
I
that they're not doing math there, though. It's more activity-based stuff.
Yeah, and then what when are they working in the critical race theory stuff?
Oh, I think they're not gonna do
Oh,
that.
that's not in fifth period.
Yeah, they do that at 4 o'clock, right after he comes home.
Cool. Well, that's great, man. I'm glad that he's able to get out there and interact with other children in that kind of setting. That's kind of the one thing that I worry a little bit about. If we have kids and we're gonna, not send them to school, But there's no neighborhood for the kids to go play in where I live, you know?
Right,
So
right.
that's one thing that I want to do. So.
Finding a good balance like that is good. It's very important. And having a routine, I believe personally, I believe that that's important. And he hasn't had so much of a routine for the last couple of years. There's
Yeah.
routines within our days, but it's not you need to be out of the door at a certain time. And I think that's kind of a good thing for him to I'll say practice.
Have you ever thought about putting him in jiu-jitsu?
Well, he did do a kung fu, for kids. Little Dragons was the name of the program for a little while, but then they closed altogether at the beginning of 2020, and then they opened up again, and everything was about masks in this little class, and it was like I couldn't. He asked me at one point, like, "Hey, did they ever reopen?" And I was like, "Ugh, I'll have to look into it." Of course, I'm on their email list, and they'd open, but they were just stressing so much that it's all about social distancing, all about masks, and made me go, "I don't want anything to do with them again." But now it's been a while. Maybe it's time. I'm not going to go back to that one,
Just
but
go
there are
do
others in
jujitsu.
nearby towns.
Kung
Yeah.
fu and jujitsu is kind of like equating ballet and boxing. So
Yeah, no, I understand, and I might be wrong about the kung fu. It's been a few years. I don't do those things myself, so it didn't retain in my head exactly what they were working at. But the guy was cool. The guy that was their instructor, I was really surprised. I wasn't surprised when he closed, and he was like pissed that they were closing, and he was saying all these things about fresh air and exercise being the best way to fight being sick. But then once they got the green flag to go ahead and open, he adhered to all the rules, all of them. So,
Well, bummer. Yeah,
yeah.
jujitsu's real good for kids, so
I'll look into jujitsu specifically.
I'll look it up in your area. I know that there's some up there. So
Sounds cool.
I actually met a guy once at a seminar, at an Eddie Bravo seminar in Portland that was from Bellingham. So
Oh, neat.
but oh, did you catch I don't listen to Joe Rogan very often. I listen when Tim Dillon's on, and Eddie Bravo was on for 3 minutes, 3 hours and 45 minutes.
Oh, really?
It was great.
Just this week?
Yeah.
Oh,
So Joe
cool.
Rogan had another conspiracy theorist on a little while ago, and it didn't really hold up to my standards. And then Eddie Bravo went on and just bulldozed it. And
Yeah.
he talks
Yeah,
about
it's
John. He talk at one point he talks about John Levi videos for 20 minutes.
no shit.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll
It's
have to check that one
awesome.
out. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one. And so that was cool. We got a little bit of time before our guest gets here. Let's hear about your most recent sun and moon experience.
The most recent one. Well, that was with all this smoke that we just had. The first the sun was there was so much smoke that I was able to stare directly at the sun without any kind of flinching at like 4 or 5 in the afternoon when it's up really high. As I've mentioned before, I do some sun gazing, some often for a sunrise as it comes up and my eyes can handle it, but boy, when it's between noon and four, if I try to look at that thing, it blinds me. It's just so white hot or whatever it is. It's so bright. But this day I was able to stare for a little while, and a good like 5 minutes of looking straight at it. I swear to you, I was seeing some very specific patterns on it, and they were the same patterns that I see on the moon, which is like what we call the craters, all the craters. And as we see it when we just look up at it, there's sort of a pattern to all of that. I guess when you zoom in on it with a telescope, you can see that they're craters, but instead from down here, it just looks like a pattern to me. That's where like John Levy's cool, man. He's shows pictures of that, and he circles a little area on there, and he says he thinks this is Earth. And then it's a reflection of our larger plane that we're a part of and all that kind of cool stuff. I'm really into looking at that pattern that's on there. And I swear to you, I saw it in the sun. It could have been smoke swirls or something like that making this pattern across there, but man, did it look like that. And that was pretty awesome. And then that evening was full moon. So I was able to watch that full moon rise, not quite rise because it was so smoky, but I went out to watch it rise. And eventually I was just about to give up. I was like, I'm not going to see it. And it just sort of emerged right there. And that was pretty cool and super orange. Boy, going through, I mean, the sun was orange going through all that smoke. The moon was absolutely orange.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It gets me into some thoughts about what if the moon and the sun are the same thing?
Yeah.
You know, like what if they're reflections of each other? We go like the Benjamin Balderson route, where he thinks that they could be a positive and negative charge that are working together, you know, like opposite ends of the same battery. And that's what
Yeah.
gives us life.
Yeah, that was so. Remember when we talked to him? That was a long time ago. That was like our second episode that we did together.
Yeah, that was about a year ago. You know, it's been about a year since I've been on now.
Yeah, awesome. That's good. That's good. I think the show just hit 2 years at the end of August. So cool, man. Yeah, but oh, let's do business. Value for value, guys. We are yeah, we don't accept where we do accept advertising dollars from people if they offer, but no one's offered yet. So at this point, we are value for value. We have an executive producer for this show is once again Drew Misson from the Missing the Point
Love Drew.
podcast down there in Australia. And he's also been doing some stuff recently with Moral Bob about movies. They've been putting out shows together. I think they did Truman Show. Did they do some John Carpenter stuff? I don't know. And then they did The Mask, I think.
Oh, cool. The Jim Carrey, The Masker.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
So,
Yeah, I haven't listened to any of
oh,
those.
they might have, I haven't either. They might have done 23. So they've been on a Jim Carrey kick.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
I
23 was
remember.
cool, man. Like he becomes obsessed with that number and starts seeing it everywhere.
Yeah, I gotta rewatch it. I watched it a long, long time ago and didn't get through it. It was before my time. So, before my awake time. So I'll check
You're
it
just like,
out.
yeah, you look for anything, you'll see it over and over again.
Yeah. But yeah, guys, hit us up in the emails. Tell us what you want to hear about. Somebody wrote us and told us, remember Adam the Giant guy, how he's a Latin instructor? Sir Mount Shasta sent me an email and he said he thinks it'd be a good idea to see if Adam would want to come on and do a show about Latin
Oh
and
yeah.
see if there's an if he can carry the show for an hour and about maybe some Latin conspiracies and if it was ever a language that was used by a population or if it was just adopted by the church and all that stuff and
Yeah.
why it's dead
Yeah.
now and
I've had a lot of questions about Latin over the years. I've never really thought to talk to an expert about it, but he would be an expert.
yeah.
Yeah, like when did people ever hold conversations in this language?
Exactly. Or was it just reserved for like the priest class?
Right.
So,
And didn't
and did people ever, this is a good one, did people ever, even if they didn't use it, understand it? Because Catholic Mass is in Latin, do they pe want people to not understand the word of God?
Didn't Latin come up when we talked with Andy and Dan about the Bach saga? And the
I was spaced out on that one. I like those. I love those guys, but that's maybe my least favorite of all the conspiracies there.
It's fascinating to me just because it's a different take on a lot of things that we do think about. And it seems like they said something either with us or maybe when I was listening to them elsewhere, of that Latin was never real. Like that Latin's kind of a modern construct to make us think of dead languages that being, I can't quite remember. But something to do with like obstructing, because they think a lot of this is rooted in language, and they think that the Latin thing was there to obstruct our ability to understand and reconstruct the world in which we live. Something like that.
Yeah.
But
Our guest is here. Maybe we should let him in. Let's see. Let's pause. We'll be right back, guys. All right, guys, we're back today, and we have our guest with us, John Bush. John's a longtime activist, creator of the Freedom Cells. Welcome to the show, man. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. We've got a lot to talk about, and yeah, we're excited. So, I think probably most of our fans know about you a little bit, but for those that don't and those that want to know more, can you give us a little introduction?
Sure. I cut my teeth on activism, spreading the truth about what happened on 9/11. Caught a documentary called 9/11 Road to Tyranny back in 2002 and dove down the rabbit hole of conspiracy research. Learned about libertarianism from Ron Paul's campaign in 2007, 2008, and started a political action committee after that with some local activists in Central Texas called Texans for Accountable Government. We had some what seemed like victories. We stopped police officers from being trained to do blood withdrawals. We pushed back on the CPS. They were going to go door to door with homeschool families without a warrant and talk to the kids. We stopped that from happening. We also had some protections passed for fusion centers, these information gathering, intelligence sharing apparatuses that merge local, state, and federal law enforcement. But, I realized that in reality, we weren't creating more freedom. We were merely slowing the growth of tyranny. And that wasn't acceptable. So I shifted my focus towards the creation of alternative institutions. Before I learned about cryptocurrency, we were promoting using silver, junk silver, as a local currency. I learned about crypto, was really excited about decentralized technology. Since then, have gotten into homesteading, helping people to move out of the cities. We founded the Freedom Cell Network, which now has over 33,000 global solutions-oriented freedom lovers working together on common goals. And more recently, I've been doing a lot of work with my new business, Live Free Academy, to help people create more freedom in their lives through entrepreneurship, financial independence, cryptocurrency, and really exploring what we call exit and build strategy.
Fantastic. That's a great great intro to a lot of really important stuff. I can't remember if I heard about you before, but I remember I heard you on, I think it was called at that point, Freeman Beyond the Wall with Mance Rayder
Oh, right on.
in the summer of 2020. It's now called the Pete Quinones Show, but I heard you talk about Freedom Cells on there. I went home. I was out walking the dog, listening on headphones, and went home, signed up, got a message that day, and was at the park in Southeast Portland the next day,
Wow.
Meeting up with five people talking about all this stuff. So
Cool.
I know Chud has some experience in his area as well, up in Washington. And yeah, so you gave us your history, your introduction. What's going on now? I've noticed you've been making the rounds a little bit. What's been going on recently?
Well, we have been hosting a lot of workshops and educational events, helping people a lot when it comes to homesteading. So we recently hosted this homesteading on a budget workshop. People can check that out at livefree.academy/budget. And it's all about helping folks to create more self-reliance, to become more self-sufficient, to grow their own food. Of course, we're experiencing some crazy inflation and some massive supply chain disruptions, and I think we haven't seen the worst of it yet. So we're really encouraging people to get prepared, to try to grow as much of their own food as possible. And on top of that, to link up with local food producers and food suppliers. We recently did this Exit and Build Land Summit. The whole idea is to encourage people to exit the big cities and to buy land and build community in the country. Of course, the big cities are where most of the traditional tyranny is rolling out. Police state, surveillance state, overregulation, right? But it's also where this technocracy is most predominant. Technocracies rule by scientific dictatorship, basically. It's where the smart city agenda is going to be, the 5G, Internet of Things, interconnectivity, track and trace all of your movements, carbon allotments per households. So we're really encouraging free people to do everything they can to exit the cities for greener pastures. And we did this homesteading on a budget workshop because we came to realize that most people, a lot of people have an objection saying, I can't possibly afford a down payment on a property. I can barely afford rent. So we wanted to show people there's creative ways in order to get out of the city, oftentimes with little to no money. For example, we're doing another workshop this week by my good friend Nomad Brad. He is a guy that was normally a nomad. He bought a U-Haul and converted into this really cool luxury RV. But he settled down on our property. He doesn't pay rent. He helps with projects, chicken coop, this and that. We pay him So he pays no rent. He gets paid. He lives on a 10-acre homestead. And I think it's a living example for folks that if you just get creative and you get out there and put yourself out there, you tap into the Freedom Cell Network, you can actually do a whole lot with very little. So we're really trying to help overcome objections and clear obstacles so people can experience real freedom in their lifetime. And the workshop Brad's going to be teaching is going to be, it's going to teach people how to do that if they want to downsize out of their apartment, if they want to find the homestead, if they have an RV or they want to get one. And folks can learn about that at libfree.academy/mobile.
Wow, cool. That sounds absolutely excellent, man. I mean, a lot of what you're saying is the exact same stuff that my wife and I are constantly encouraging people to do. You even said greener pastures. Our whole deal, we call it greener postures because we're looking straight, stand straight and look forward and find something new. Mm-hmm. And my wife even does workshop courses to help people learn how she preserves food, because we have a small homestead here. We're on 25 acres and we don't utilize all 25 acres as of yet. It's only our third year here, and we've got a lot of pasture rejuvenation and things like that going on. But we're doing what we can with what we've got. And something that we learned right away in year one is that we can grow more food than we can eat. And that was, or sell for that matter, because a lot of this was happening in 2019 and then 2020. And we were done with farmers markets in 2020. We didn't want those masked up, regulated, even eventually asking for vaccine passports in order to come and buy from local people. It was absolutely insane. But we had lots of food. And we realized that we had lost what we consider to be an ancient art of canning, fermenting, preserving in general. And so my wife, when she does something, she goes full scale, and she started learning how to can. These are things that we were exposed to by our grandparents when we were kids, but it didn't really matter to us, not too much. It didn't matter to our parents at all because there's grocery stores. But by the time we're, halfway through 2020, we were going, man, we need to preserve these arts that are being lost. So we started going full hog on it and learning how to preserve what we could grow as much as we can, but keep it within mind that we need to do something after it's grown. We can't just eat tons of food every day. I mean, we can to a certain degree, but not as much as we're capable of producing. Yeah. So we started seeing this need to help other people find ways to do things with that. And as soon as we did that, we were doing in-person workshops. We started realizing that there are a lot of people on the internet who live in apartments who like what we're doing, but it's too far. It's way too much of a stretch for them to even think about growing food. Or we're encouraging people, find a local farmer and buy a half a cow. Well, if you're in an apartment, that can be difficult to do. You give up one of your rooms just for a freezer. Yeah, and good luck having your apartment building allow you to put like a drop freezer in your apartment and all that kind of stuff. So we started focusing on stuff like you're talking about, encouraging people who are, I'll say, stuck. They're stuck in the city. They're stuck in a place where they feel that they can't homestead. But we believe very much that it can start on any sort of level, including your kitchen counter.
I love it. Yeah, for sure. It sounds like you guys are on the right path. And I love that logo, by the way, with all that. I've been listening, but also checking out the ducks and all the cool stuff you got going on there. Well played with that. Yeah, nothing could be more important at this point. And I've learned that more often than not, the biggest challenge that people have is an internal limiting belief, right? So like I'm in an apartment, I can't homestead, the chest freezer issue or whatever. There's always a way around it. You just have to get creative. And then when you find like-minded people working together, there's much more opportunity there. So for the guys that are in the apartment, but they want to pitch in and purchase a cow, which by the way, we did that recently. We got 16 people together. We purchased a whole cow, had it slaughtered, and we have a house and a guest house. So we got the big giant chest freezer, and the whole cow fit the entire big old chest freezer. So it was a pretty cool experience. Meanwhile, everyone's worried about food scarcity and supply chain problems, and we're opening up the chest freezer. And it's like, mm-hmm. But all you got to do is link up with other people, use the Freedom Cell network, find the person that has a house or a homestead. You could put the chest freezer on their property. They're part of your bug out survival crew. So because you have an apartment doesn't mean you can't have meat stored. You just store it at your buddy's house, and then at your apartment, you do whatever it is that you need to do there to reciprocate. But I highly encourage people to at least come up with a plan. Maybe it's not this month, maybe it's not even this year, but if you care about freedom, if you see the writing on the wall, if you see what's coming down the pike, which everyone should, it's an open conspiracy. They're aiming to create a digital panopticon surveillance society, control grid, prison planet, as Alex Jones calls it. It would behoove you to get the heck out of the city. So come up with the land, down payment, get the RV to move on to someone else's property, find 6-7 buddies, everybody chips in $5,000. Before you know it, you got a down payment on a $200,000 property. Everybody puts a tiny home, builds a house, parks the RV, whatever it may be. You don't even have to live there full time. Just at least have the space, get the gardens going, have the food storage going out there so you have a place to go when this tyranny inevitably accelerates.
I know that you talk a lot about exiting and building something new. What about, and that probably refers to exiting large cities, exiting unfree states, even maybe unfree countries. What about the people who want to stay where they are? Like, I'm in Oregon, Chud's in Washington. We're probably generally considered, you know, two of the most unfree states. The whole West Coast is pretty locked down, you know. As Northern California, where I live, I don't necessarily agree with it. I think where I live in Oregon is probably much freer than, like, say, Austin, Texas, or Nashville, Tennessee, or anything like that. What do you think about being able to find freedom in unfree places? Because I was not, you know, I live out in rural Oregon on a 15-acre homestead, and I wasn't bothered by any of the issues. I was when I still lived in suburban Portland, and we, you know, we saw the writing on the wall there, sold our house for a ton of money, and were able to get this place. But I don't necessarily think that people need to uproot their whole lives, especially people that have large extended families and support networks where they live. What do you think about people staying and building in places that aren't necessarily considered, you know, free, that aren't Tennessee or North Dakota or whatever, or Texas?
I'm with you completely. Everyone has different values, right? So for some people, they value stability, consistency. For some people, myself included, I very much value family, and I'm blessed that my whole family is here in Central Texas. They all live in Austin. I was born and raised in Austin, but I got the heck out of there and moved to the neighboring county that's a lot more rural and conservative. But it's all whatever floats each person's boat. So if you're established, you got relationships, you got a job, you have family, then by all means, make choices based on what's most important to you. The big key thing, though, is I do believe it's really important to leave the big cities, especially the hardcore Democrat-controlled cities. I'm not a left-right Democrat-Republican kind of guy, but I would much prefer to be governed by a conservative small-town Republican county commissioner's court than Democrat, socialist, hardcore, left-wing, woke communists in a major city. So on the surface, I would say if you're in a city, a big city especially, it would very much behoove you to get out of that city. And I think it's a lot harder to make the case for staying. But if you just so happen to already be in a rural area, you already got the homestead, you got your family established, then it matters less what state you're in. That being said, I mean, there's income tax on some certain states, and the big key difference is being in the city versus being in the country. That's what's more important than being in Texas compared to being in Oregon. But again, it's all whatever floats, each person's personal choices and their own values and preferences. That's part of the reason why I like to present the whole exit and build thing, which essentially is a strategy. Exit the system, exit the matrix, exit the government schools, build homeschool co-ops, exit the pharmaceutical industrial complex, rely on natural medicine and healthcare, natural healthcare modalities, exit the banks, use crypto and local currencies or barter, right? That's the whole idea. But I present it as a spectrum. So on the one hand, you have total freedom, total agorist. They don't, some of that don't, doesn't pay taxes. They don't comply with anything. They don't have a driver's license or whatever. And on the other hand, you have like Joe Biden voting, Hillary Clinton bumper sticker. They just love government. They love paying taxes. They feel so good about themselves for contributing to civil society, right? So there's a spectrum we have here. Most people
is that,
in our,
is that guy vaccinated as well, or
quadruple vaccinated? He's excited for anything that comes his way from
for the
public
fifth
health
one
establishment.
Coming out this week.
He got COVID recently. Still wears a mask. But and you know, most people in our freedom community, if you got the spectrum here, total freedom, total slavery. You know, there's somewhere around here, kind of in the middle, really. So I just encourage people, even if you live in a city, if you live in Oregon, Texas, wherever you live, start taking proactive steps slowly but surely, or take massive action. I'm a big fan of massive action, but start working your way towards greater freedom. You don't have to go all the way. Some people never will. It's my hope that through strength in numbers and just having 100,000, a million of us all working together, we can reach total freedom, or at least our children or grandchildren can. But in the meantime, let us, city dwellers or not, let's start working towards more preparedness, more self-sufficiency, less reliance on these centralized systems, and more independence, so at least they cannot leverage food as a weapon or force us to do something because we work for a major corporation and we end up having to make a choice between our income and doing some bodily, some medical procedure we don't want to do. So yeah, it's, this is just my views. People can follow them or not, but I do think it'd be really important for folks that care about freedom to get the heck out of the major cities, even if they stay in a state like Oregon. Oregon's, I've never been to Oregon, but I hear it's beautiful. And there's a lot of freedom people in Oregon. We actually have a pretty strong Freedom Cell Network community there. And I know there's this Sasquatch Festival.
Yep.
It's got Brian puts on. So yeah, that's what I would say about that.
Yeah, I had a lot of experience in that Portland Freedom Cell thing that they do. I think they call it like PDX Free Thinkers now. I met some of the best people I've ever met in my life there, people that I'm still very, very good friends with. And I also met about 90% of the people that weren't willing to get into action, want to stay in the cities, and aren't really doing anything. Weren't from a freedom or liberty background, kind of more communist. They had a big Telegram group. They still have it. It had a whole bunch of Antifa guys in there. And one of the guys in there at the meeting told us that we were systematically racist if we were leaving the city to go live on the land because Black people weren't capable of doing that. So,
Sure are capable of doing it, and many people do. It doesn't have anything to do with the skin color, but
yeah. Well, he's a Black guy in Portland who gets, white people don't want to be called racist there, so they do pretty much whatever they tell them to.
Oh man.
That's the critique of it. But the problem is that we didn't follow the Freedom Cell plan and break off into those small 8-person groups or families right away, and it turned into this big massive blob of like people coming to a meeting. It'd be like 80 people at a meeting, and the whole meeting would just be people going around in a circle talking, doing an introduction, and that breeds ego and people looking for power. And
they weren't doing pronouns, were they?
I guarantee you they were banging the little at one point they were banging the little like bowl gong thing where you stir the gong and it makes like a different tone. And then the same guy that told people that they were racist for leaving the city and moving on to property said that he wasn't going to do it anymore because it offended some people's sensibilities and it hurt their ears. They'd start the meetings with like a prayer to the indigenous people who actually owns the land that we're sitting on. But we never broke off into those groups. But what I was willing to get from it was meeting some fantastic people. I met my friend Sylvia and Coulter, and they were like the first people that I knew that they had like a beautiful house in Portland with like this huge food forest backyard, and they saw the writing on the wall. They found freedom cells through Tom Woods. So they were like kind of like more conservative, normal freedom people. And then they bought 12 acres, paid for it in cash, and left, you know. And they were like a real inspiration. And then another issue I had is like, as soon as I got out of town, I got onto like the bigger Northwest Oregon or Northwest Pacific Northwest Telegram page, and was like, hey, I'm looking for any Freedom Cell people in Columbia County up here in the Pacific Northwest. I've got some property and I want to just meet some people, looking for people that know how to do bees and maybe have livestock they want to sell. And like was immediately like DM'd like from 10 people saying, hey, can I come live on your land for free? And I was just like, awesome. But that wasn't awesome to me, is that I didn't want people living on my land for free. I want people to like be able to do it. And I think the problem that I had is that there's so many people that don't want to do it. Can you speak to getting into action versus like talking about it a lot?
Yeah. I mean, talk is cheap and easy, and people can just talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. And I don't know, a lot of people get mixed up on what good activism is, and people feel like forwarding articles on Telegram is going to change the world, or sharing YouTube videos here and there. There's a place for education. There's a place for red pilling people and waking people up. But at the end of the day, I would contend that there's enough of us that are already awake, that believe in the principles of liberty, that if we simply shift our focus towards getting stuff done, towards activism, towards action, we can really create an environment where we can experience real freedom. And I appreciate you sharing about the Freedom Cell group up there just getting too big, or whether it's a Freedom Cell group or not, just having like a huge body, because the decentralization is important. It's also important to have, you know, somebody that's leading the charge that knows how to run a meeting. Like, we just held a meeting with 70 people here in Central Texas. It was our whole Central Texas community we invited to this one. So we have like 750 people in Central Texas. And within that meta cadre, as we call it, this regional Freedom Cell group, there's local groups, Bastrop, Fayette County, which is where I am, South Austin, downtown Austin, Hill Country to the west, Williamson County to the north, San Marcos, Hayes County further south. Those are like subgroups, middle cadre groups. And then within each of those groups, there's even smaller, tighter knit local groups. But you host a meeting, you just keep things on pace. We don't need to introduce everybody. Sometimes we'll open the floor after we do the formal meeting, if anybody has an announcements and stuff. But yeah, people just got to be aware, like when you open up the floor to everyone to introduce themselves, it ends up taking way too long and nothing gets done. But it's important to orient ourselves towards action, because at the end of the day, action is all that matters. Ideas, perfect example, like this whole Freedom Cell thing, it was an idea that I had. It was birthed back in 2014, 2015. And we had the very first Freedom Cell inner cadre. It was me and a small group of friends and my ex-wife. And the group ended up falling apart due to personality differences, which is why it's really important that we be our best selves. We learn how to handle conflict. We practice nonviolent communication, for example. And, you know, at the time I had two kiddos, I was broke, life was a struggle. So I focused on entrepreneurship and making more money and kind of pulled back from the activism. Well, if it wasn't for Derek Brose taking the idea and helping to build it and take action upon it and turn it into a network, it would have just been an idea that died on the vine, because I went back inward and focused on raising my family and business. And so idea, Freedom Cells, this cool thing, what if we got together in these small groups and the small groups linked up with other small groups and expanded into this decentralized global network? That'd be really cool, right? And I talked about it. I did speeches. I did podcasts. And then I kind of pulled back. Well, if it wasn't for Derek taking action, it wouldn't have turned into the global network of 33,000 people that gain immense benefit from it all the time. So talk is cheap. Action is critical. And one thing that I try to highlight as a motivator for folks is, it may not seem it now, although most people can see the writing on the wall, but We're in this frog in the boiling pot gradualism scenario where slowly but surely piecemeal, these globalists, these technocrats, the World Economic Forum, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Build Back Better, whatever, they're slowly putting their pieces into play to create an environment where it makes it next to impossible to resist or to assert any semblance of sovereignty. And if we allow this machine, this system to be fully implemented, we may find ourselves, or our children will find themselves, in a situation where they can no longer live as free people at all. And basically you have Chinese style technocratic communist dictatorship spread across the entire globe. So it really is pretty important. Right now we're at the precipice. We could go one way towards greater freedom or another way towards greater despair, dissolution, serfdom. And I just want people to really take that seriously, because it's pretty important. It's actually, you know, the future of humanity is counting on us to carve out our little piece of freedom and to shout from the rooftops how wonderful it is, so other people can join us, just like Samuel Abraconkin encouraged in the New Libertarian Manifesto, that there would be these little pockets of agorism, and hopefully the other folks will see how happy and wealthy the agorists are and hope to join us. But nothing could be more important. It's my life's work. And I appreciate you guys having talking about agorism, doing your thing, leading by example, becoming more self-sufficient, because it's crunch time.
Yeah. To speak on the inner the cadre, the different cadres that you have, I think that's a really, really key aspect to what your program is all about.
You Our know, like program. If
you, right. It's like, I think of, you know, if you think of a household or a family as the most inner cadre, then to have an outer one, I forget your recommendation, if it's like 6 or 8 other households that become your inner cadre, that is the foundation. You guys are seeing each other once a week, at least. You guys are calling each other when you have a project that you need extra hands for. Those are the people that you stay connected with all the time and be very close with. Hopefully they're within a vicinity that, like, say if the grid went down, you guys would be able to physically contact each other and be in the same realm as each other. Some people in my area are also into to radio communications and things like that.
Awesome.
Which I think is really freaking cool.
Yeah.
Then as to Adam's point, where his freedom cell got too big too fast, I've seen that problem in my area as well. I say problem like it's really a problem, but it wasn't. It was just some people got really excited about what we were doing. And before I felt that we had secured our inner cadre of families, they were going out hard and trying to teach other people how to start the same freedom cells that we were starting. And I felt at that point, it was like, no, we need to focus on ourselves for a while. You know, if we do this for a year, then we could maybe start teaching other people. And the key word here is teaching. We're always teaching if we're doing that, because like you say, we're leading by example. And I think it's really key to have really strong core relationships with these other families that are part of your inner cadre. And if you go straight from a cadre of 8 families to having, you know, however many people you said in Texas all getting together for the meta cadre, if you skip those steps in between, I think that it grows too big too fast. And then suddenly you have what Adam had, where you've got Antifa and communists joining in. And it's like, wait, this isn't what at least Adam and I didn't sign up for, you know? What do you think of all that?
Yeah, so we have first of all, folks can register and join the Freedom Cell Network at freedomcells.org, freedomcells.org. We just recently revamped the website. You can put a fake name, fake email address if you don't want to be on a list. But at the end of the day, you know, if we're all on the list, then there is no list. The list becomes irrelevant. But and it's also we would prefer to be part of the Freedom Cell Network and not really need it than to all of a sudden be cracked down upon or have some sort of emergency. And you, because you're afraid to join a website, you don't have that backup and support. And by the way, you don't have to join the website to be part of the Freedom Cell Network. You just have to build Freedom Cells, be solutions oriented. We're also very active on Telegram. But we have this guide that you can access through the Freedom Cells directory on Telegram or through the website freedomcells.org. And in the guide, there's like a crowdsourced guide of how to start Freedom Cells successfully and how to do the whole Freedom Cell thing. And we talk about different vectors for starting a Freedom Cell network in your area. Maybe it's one person, they hear this interview and they're like, oh, I'm gonna join the site. I'm the only person on there. Wow. So you still put yourself on the map. We literally have a map. You add a pin to the map. It's advised that you don't use your home address, but you have to use a real address or the map system will kick you back. So you can put the park down the street, local coffee shop, maybe a coffee shop or a bar that you wanna meet at or whatever. And so if you're the first person, then it's important to go find other people. To start with your inner circle, like imagine concentric circles. So you start with what this guy, Grant Cardone, I'm a big fan. He's a big success sales and marketing guy. He talks about your power base. You start with your power base, family, friends. But oftentimes those are the hardest folks to get on board. But then you go one circle out. Maybe it's people you work with. Maybe it's folks that are in this group that you are tied to or folks that campaigned for Ron Paul back in the day or whatever. And you go start trying to find people. You go to the farmer's market. You go to the homeschool co-op meetups. You go to the gun range. You go to the prepper groups, whatever it may be. You host a workshop with a predominant freedom voice or self-sufficiency expert. And then you gather everyone's email address and you follow up with them and educate them about the Freedom Cell Network. Let's say you have a group of 4 or 8 people to start. And that magic number is 8. We encourage people to form groups of 8 because it's been shown that 8 people is the optimal number of people for maximum creativity. It doesn't have to be 8 though. It can be 6, it can be 12, it can be whatever you want. It could be 8 families, it could be 8 people. You can count the kids, you can not count the kids. And so if you have 4 or 5 people, let's say, then one thing you could do is form a cadre with those people, start working together, establish some goals and some plans. But then you could also, in order to grow the network, you take those 4 or 5 people and they go start 4 or 5 groups. It could just be a recruiting mission. Those groups don't have to stay together, but it's like, all right, guys, we got 5 people. Let's all set a goal for each of us to go recruit 8 more people now. And all of a sudden we'll go from 5 people to 45 people. How cool would that be? Then another thing is if you have a big group already, let's say you already have a group, you already got a freedom group, folks that get together to talk about truth or whatever. You take the group and then you say, how can we maintain the cohesion of this group, but break down into smaller groups so we can be more focused and we can be more decentralized? So you have a group of 40 people, let's say. You can say, all right, well, ideally, I think the best thing to do is break off based on geographic area. So if you have 40 people that spread across a city, maybe there's some folks in the southern part of town, maybe there's some folks in the downtown area, and there's some folks east, north, west, whatever. Or let's say you split off based on special interest. These are the families, they want to get the kids together, they want to start a homeschool co-op. These are the single younger guys, they're into gardening and cryptocurrency or whatever. These are the guys that have land, or maybe you just do it randomly. I don't know, but the idea is even if you have a larger group, you need leaders that are conscious of the importance of decentralization and people come in and set the tone. Generally, I've found that most people, there's this leader-follower dichotomy that many anarchists resist, although it's a natural human tendency and we ought not to resist it, but we should have good leaders that aren't ego-driven or seeking to control other people or wanting to be leaders for the sake of being a leader. So most often there's folks that are looking to be led, looking for direction. So that's why it's up to leaders or future leaders, because I mean, not everybody's born with leadership abilities, but everyone can certainly garner those abilities. They can cultivate it by studying and emulating other people. And then good leaders, really good leaders, replicate themselves and create other good leaders and then recognize those people and try to pull back and let them take the opportunity to grow and lead, but really just takes a good leader coming in and organizing, herding cats. Same thing if it's political activism, truth activism, or Freedom Cell organizing. You got to have an organizer in there. The challenge is if you have a bad leader that's in it for ego, doesn't care about decentralization or the true freedom cell strategy of exit and build. They're looking to do politics. They're looking to do gender identity, whatever. Let's say our pronouns at the beginning of the meeting. Let's honor. It's cool to honor your ancestors, right? But if it's like becomes a distraction and like that's takes up a bunch of time, whatever. The challenge is when you got one of those leaders and then somebody else is like, this guy's not doing it the way that we've learned is the best practice for this network. And then there's a clash. But more often than not, there's a vacuum. And it just takes somebody that gets it. And I encourage people to study this Freedom Cells guide, because that's really what we've determined to be the best practices. And it's fluid. We don't know everything. We've never built a free society before. We're trying to figure it out as we go. But usually folks are just looking for leadership. So one person steps up and they're like, hey, you know, I think that we could do this in a decentralized way. So let's keep meeting as this group, but maybe we meet once a month or every 2 months, and we find these local groups that meet more often, and then we share information with one another and support one another. So that's what I would share with that. And these are all normal struggles. We're all trying to figure it out as we go. And I actually appreciate having this conversation with you guys, doing an interview and spreading the message, but also learning what you guys have experienced has worked and hasn't worked is really critical. And the whole idea of this Freedom Cell network is the health of each individual cell, which is an individual or a small group of individuals. The health of the cell is dependent on the health of the overall body, health of the network, just as the health of the body network is dependent on the health of each cell. And so we can become more healthy as a network by sharing information like this with one another so we can improve in the future.
Yeah. And then one thing that I like to talk about too is, so if you put a sack over somebody's head and like put them in a car and drove them to where I live and told them that they're in the Ozarks, you know, that's what they think. I live in a really, really rural area. It's so the people here are going to be lean real hard conservative, MAGA boomers, a lot of them, but there's younger people as well, and they're all probably just more conservative, normal, family-oriented type people. I think that's, in my opinion, I mean, for me, that's who I would rather spend time with those people than conservative people than people from Portland who just don't like wearing masks, who think they're on my team. I don't know if you have any experience with this. Can you give any strategies for kind of talking to these like thin blue line boomer type people? Who I think are more receptive to our way of life. What's a good way what's some strategies for talking to them?
Great question. So we moved out to the country, 10-acre homestead, and we quickly met our neighbors. In fact, the guy that we bought the house from, one day we're walking around, he's like, yeah, I don't know about you guys, but we didn't take the vaccine. Did you guys? I'm like, no, we definitely didn't. He's like, yeah, you know, this whole COVID thing, you know, I don't want to sound crazy or anything, but it all seems like this is part of Agenda 21. Have you heard of Agenda 21? I was like, all right, my man, you know, we're everywhere. There's so many people that get it nowadays. But he was like, you got to meet the neighbors. The neighbors are great. They're preppers. They're, you know, they're really conservative, really good people, this old couple. So we've come to be really close with this old couple. The wife is like 76. The dude's like 70 or 60. Like, they're old folks, and they get around, and they got chickens, and they got 26 acres. And we had a horse that unfortunately passed away. It got out of our property. It would always like bolt towards the gate, unfortunately, but it got hit by a car. And so first thing we do is call up the neighbors. They come with their tractor, you know, and we drag the horse over their property. We bury it on their property. Great people. They too had a great conversation. They're like, you know, we didn't take that shot. They didn't call it a vaccine, rightfully so. You know, we didn't take the shot. You know, we're Christians. We didn't take it for religious reasons because it's the mark of the beast, right? And we're like, yeah, those are our people. So the advice I would give is, I agree. I would definitely rather network and coalesce with conservative MAGA types compared to your typical liberals or whatever. But something I learned from an early mentor is to let us build shared value based on shared values. So don't come in, especially us younger folk, you know, and we're talking to boomers and older folks. Let's honor whatever wisdom that they have. But also there's ignorance, of course, being old and stuck in your ways. But let's not call that to attention. Let's not try to correct them on their this or that. Let's instead learn from them. They have experience in the world. A lot of them are veterans too. And I tell you what, I'm not a big military guy in the least bit. And obviously, you know, the truth of the matter is that the United States military is, you know, backs all the mega corporations and the foreign wars of aggression are based on resource control and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's veterans are some good people to have in your corner because they know how to fight. They know how to survive. They have a general attitude of rugged individualism and helping people. So, I would try to build shared value based on shared values, strike up a conversation. If they're into gardening, old folks will talk your head off about the crops and what to worry about with the seasons and this plant this here and blah, blah, blah. Talk about guns. I don't know what all the gun laws are up in Oregon. I'm sure you can still own firearms just fine. But, you know, guns are a great way. Let's go to the shooting range together, cooking, sharing meals together. Another good tip with anybody is, especially older folks, Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. That was one of the first self-development books I ever dove into back in the day. But one of the things he encourages is to speak in terms of other people's interests. So you strike up a conversation. This is good for sales as well. You're kind of fact finding. What are these people into, right? I used to sell cars. So we strike up a conversation. Oh, do you have family? How far are you going to be driving? What's your normal use going to be like? Do you need a third row seats? Whatever. You fact find what their needs are so you can put them on the right product. But just the same, you can fact find about a human and find out what they're interested in and then start talking about that. People love to talk about themselves. I know we love to talk about ourselves, but in the context of building relationships, let them talk about themselves and then find areas of common interest, share some stories about similar things you've been involved in. And it's a great way to build those networks. Slowly but surely, the role of a libertarian, right? And this is what Samuel Rekonkin talks about. You know, we want to bring agorism to libertarians and bring libertarianism to agorists. Counter economists that are opting out of the system, operating outside of the state. But slowly but surely, you know, you can try to, if you want to, you can try to bring them over to more of a libertarian viewpoint by speaking about the ills of government as a whole, softly talking about how Trump actually racked up the national debt and did this and that. But in the beginning, I would avoid that altogether and don't try to start an argument or don't try to be right. Simply try to find common ground. Then over time, as you build that relationship and that trust, you can start throwing a little bit of challenging conversations out there about law. You know, well, can we really trust law enforcement when if they're going to do gun grabs, it's going to be the police that are going to be the ones asking for the guns? You know, what do we do about that? How do you justify that? What are your thoughts on that? And, you know, to share again, I don't think we have to worry about gun grabbing at all in a state like Texas, because there's an overall ethos and culture that supports guns. It may be a little bit more of a challenge in a state like California or Oregon per se, but then again, to harken back to in the country, you just said it yourself, your neighbors are MAGA folks and like gun-toting Republican conservatives. It's definitely gonna be a lot harder out there compared to in the city. But that's what I would say. And at the same time, I would build relationships with more liberal-leaning people too. But I would encourage people, maybe it's like feel people out. Because with the left-leaning radicals, you know, we can align on police accountability and maybe decentralization, but there's certain folks that just lack the intellectual honesty and are so far from our libertarian agorist purity that it's best to just avoid them altogether. And then in some instances, they may very well be the enemy. Like some of these Antifa guys, we're not fascists. We love all people and aren't racist in the least bit. But for some reason, they want to say that we're all racist and fascist. It's like, what the hell are you even talking about? Well, I'm just going to avoid you altogether because you may be some guy that tries to round us up or do something crazy. Actually, they're probably not going to do anything. It's just a bunch of peckerwoods at the end of the day, shouting at buildings and throwing rocks at cars. But anyway, I'm rambling. I appreciate you guys letting me blow it out.
That all reminds me of the great Scott Horton used to always say.
The great Scott Horton.
The great Scott Horton. I'm just messing with I'm just messing with Adam to say that, but
I say Scott the great Horton, Tom Woods, the great.
I
don't. Tom
so I after his opinion on the problem with the air over the last 2 years, I took the great out of his name, and he's just Scott Horton, the guy that knows a lot about the Middle East to me.
So. He's great on the Middle East, and something that he used to say, and I'm sure he still does, is you got to talk to the left from the left, and you talk to the right from the right.
Yeah,
you're never gonna get any. He's not even talking about winning an argument. You're never gonna even break ground with an argument with anyone if you come at it from a MAGA point of view and they're a hardcore Democrat. You know, you're just gonna butt heads right at the beginning and never get there. But people in positions like ours, where we're not left or right, we actually see through that paradigm. There are things that we can say that will both piss off and make happy both sides. So if you as you're saying, you know, kind of go on a fact-finding mission, talk to someone for a few minutes, you start by talking about the weather, and you figure out right away, you can figure out right away whether or not they believe in chemtrails, right? You know, is that going too far to talk about far out conspiracies? Probably with the average person.
Unless they're a Q person, then they're all about the conspiracies.
then they might be all about it, but maybe you'll find that. And then you can kind of talk to them from the Q perspective, as opposed to the MAGA perspective that you might've projected on them upon meeting them. And then vice versa, you know, there are people out in my area who appear to be like MAGA type people, but you start talking to them and it turns out they're hardcore liberals. You know, even I hate using all these labels because they're not accurate. I'm thinking of real people, but like I have one neighbor who's probably more in the MAGA camp, in quotes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he came to me earlier this year and asked if it was okay if he sprays on a certain fence line. And, you know, of course, we don't want that. But he's like in his 70s and he's lived here for a long time. I don't feel comfortable telling him, no, you can't do what you have always done. So I said, well, if that's the way you do it, you know, I'm okay with it. I started giving him my position and he was like, well, you know, the truth is I've never sprayed in my life. I'm getting old and I have to keep this fence line in shape and it's too much work for me to do. So I'm going to start doing this. And, you know, one thing led to another and I offered to take care of that fence line for him. He's still going to do his other ones that aren't bordering on my property. Full respect on every side. I never would have guessed that guy didn't like spraying. And he's not an environmentalist at all. He just thinks it's kind of pussy. You know, like we're
the easy way out.
Just do it yourself. You use a weed eater. It's not something that you need to, you know, just walk along and spray something. It's just something that you take care of the way he has since he was a kid. Yeah. So yeah, getting to know people and finding the common ground is the way to start getting into where there's a good chance that you can have a good relationship with neighbors on all four or more sides of you.
Yeah. Yeah. Food is a great, what's the word? Something that brings everyone together. Food. You can talk about growing food. You can share a meal and it's the great unifier. It's not controversial, this or that, but yeah.
Yeah. I think just, doing commerce with your neighbors who don't even know that they're participating in agorism is, it makes me happy that there's people that don't even, that are so cool and so into like this life that it's not even like a novelty to them anymore. They're the real deal. Like my neighbors, I think they're vaccinated. I think they're probably, I don't know what their political views are. I don't got to get into it with them, but they want to sell their old Ram because they can't breed it anymore because it's related to everything on their property. They say, hey, Adam, you want our old Ram for $200? I say, yeah. They bring it over in their trailer, you know, it's a quarter mile down the road. One time our freezers are getting low and I see the writing on the wall and I send one text. I say, hey, do you guys have half a cow I can get? They're like, we've got a few different cows in the freezer. We can piece together half a cow for you.
Nice.
When do you want it? This afternoon. Okay. Here's how much. Here's $1,000. And I Venmo her $1,000 and she brings me over meat. And another resource that I talk about all the time on this show, that I've met some of the best people that I know in the whole world on the Craigslist farm and garden section. That's where that's where I found meat. That's where I bought a pig off there. I Yeah, and then just traveling to people's properties to pick up livestock, and how many people on there that I bought pigs from people and sheep, and how many people just will help you and actually want to show you their homestead and what they're doing and stuff like that. So I think that is a fantastic resource as well. Azure, that food
Distribution.
distribution where you go pick it up. A lot of homesteaders do that as well. I've met some really great people there as well.
Azure. I'll check that out.
Azure. Azure.
So
Azure.
it's a website, John, and you go there. They're one of the places that got like firebombed, like one of the big food distribution plants that got burnt down. And
Are you sure
you
that's the spelling?
not positive.
It's either Azure or Azzure. But they you order food from them, and then you go to a drop spot and you pick it up.
Cool.
And you're picking up with other people who are also probably going to be somewhat similar minded to you, because they're buying food in bulk, good natural food in bulk, and they also have to be there at the right time, or because they just drop your stuff off,
Yeah,
you'll be
and then
screwed if you don't show up.
they have a person that's like the coordinator, and they're not getting paid, but they're getting some sort of kickback on the price of their food. So
Nice.
I met the lady who does it over the river from me, and I bought sheep from her and all sorts of cool stuff. And then I eventually ended up out at our property, walking around. She showed us everything last winter, and then I was up there a couple weeks ago for a workshop on how to butcher, how to dispatch and butcher a pig. So it was really, really cool.
I love
But
it.
I know we're getting towards the end of your time. I guess I have one more question, a couple more questions. Can you rate for me Jeff Berwick's rapping skills and his fighting?
Oh no.
I did not expect that question.
I actually lived in Acapulco for 6 months and attended a couple of the Anarchapulco conferences, and I watched the anarchist documentary, and I believe that it was very accurate as far as what was communicated. That's
Yeah, I
basically what
was
happened.
surprised, and I never went, but I thought that it did a pretty good portrayal.
Yeah, I think some people have a tendency to attract drama, so I don't want to be one of those people to attract drama, but I will say, I believe I have much better rapping skills, especially freestyling skills, than Mr. Berwick and most other people. But I'll leave it at that.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I won't get you in trouble. One more. Agenda 2030. It says there was, they say you will own nothing and you'll never be happier. They also say something right after that, there was a group of people who lived outside the city. Their lives were very different from ours. What does it mean? Are we like the people in Handmaid's Tale who are shoveling radioactive dirt into piles, or are we living our best lives out on our homesteads with families and friends and eating good food and thriving?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely the latter. I pulled up the article. It was on the World Economic Forum website, but they pulled it down because it was very bad optics.
Yeah, they're
And
doing a
that,
lot of that lately with the Diebold
yeah.
Report and stuff like that as well.
That, like, our alternative media just blew it up. The headline is, "Welcome to 2030. I own nothing, have no privacy, and life has never been better."
They leave that no privacy out. Nobody really says that one. That's kind of important.
And it was actually written in 2016 before the Great Reset was announced. So, of course, this has been an effort for decades, if not centuries now. But let me just read the part you're referencing, because it's an article that talks about we don't own anything anymore. We just rent things. We don't even own our home. We sleep at our home, but when we're not there, other people can use it. It talks about AI and stuff. And then it says, "My biggest concern is all the people who do not live in our city, those we lost on the way, those who decided that it became too much, all this technology, those who felt obsolete and useless when robots and AI took over big parts of our jobs, those who got upset with the political system and turned against it. They live different kinds of lives outside of the city. Some have formed little self-supplying communities. Others just stayed in the empty and abandoned houses in small 19th century villages. And then it says, once in a while, I feel annoyed that I have no real privacy, nowhere I can go and not be registered. I know that somewhere everything I do, think, and dream is recorded. It's just a hope that nobody will use it against me. Wow. So yes, I read that for the first time and was like, wow, that sounds like us, self-supplying communities outside of the city. So it's fundamental for each and every one of us to take a more active role, to double down on our efforts, to unite with freedom-loving people, to focus on action, on solutions, to cut the drama, the gossip, the article sharing, news sharing, but share this podcast, of course, and really just dig in and become more self-reliant. Identify vulnerabilities in our lives where we are over dependent on centralized system. Identify weaknesses, because it's clear that the enemies of freedom will use pain points, will make life difficult, will put us in a position where we're forced to make difficult choices. So let's preemptively avoid those difficult choices by becoming as independent as humanly possible. And we created the Freedom Cell Network to help with that, freedomcells.org. I launched my business, Live Free Academy, to do workshops, trainings, consultations. We have a membership program. People can learn more and join our daily newsletter at livefree.academy, livefree.academy. And finally, we organized a movement, an event to push back on the Great Reset and the World Economic Forum and United Nations efforts to centralize power. It's called The Greater Reset. TheGreaterReset.org is the website, TheGreaterReset.org. And we're hosting our fourth iteration of The Greater Reset. It's called The Greater Reset for Co-Creation. It's taking place January 18th through the 22nd. People can join us in person. We simulcast from Central Texas here in Bastrop, the Bastrop Convention Center, and also from Morelia, Mexico. So it's a two in-person spaces. We bounce between speakers, and we also broadcast it for free to the internet. People can register at thegreaterreset.org, and we hope folks will join us and hope folks will realize that we are powerful human beings. We shouldn't be subjected to this tyranny. We just have to make a choice to live differently, and the world will become a much better place.
Fantastic. John, I want to thank you so much for your time, and thanks for letting us be, a little critical and asking you some hard questions, and we really appreciate it. And I think there is great opportunity for people to join freedomcells.org, find like-minded people, and just remember, you got to separate the wheat from the chaff, and just find your people, and they're out there. Especially, that was a great thing about actually being able to do it in Portland, was like in the fall, like November of 2020, was seeing these as the group continued to grow and was still, it was just fantastic seeing these people come into a room without a mask on, who hadn't like spoken to any like-minded person in, you know, a really long time, and have almost a spiritual, emotional experience. And, I met some of those people, and I'm still very good friends with them. So the new revamped Freedom Cells website up yet?
Yep, it's launched. Freedomcells.org is the website, and it's much easier. We even have an Agora where people can list products and services, or that they're hiring, or they're looking for a job, all sorts of cool stuff like
that. Sort of a Craigslist for agorists.
That's right.
And will my old login work for the new site, or do I need to create a new?
It should work. However, you might need to do a password reset. If anybody has any issues, we have a support volunteer team and some paid folks. They can just email support@freedomcells.org. But you should be able to log in seamlessly. Worst case scenario, you'll have to do a password reset with the same email.
Fantastic. Yeah, this is great. Chud, any final words or thoughts?
No, I think this has been great, though. It's great to sit down and talk with you and hear where you're at on all these things at this point in time. So it's really good.
Fantastic. Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks, John. If you could put in a good word with Derek Bros for us, we'd love to talk to him as well. But sure. Thanks for everything. We really appreciate it. Have your assistant email me all the links you want to put in the show notes, and we'll awesome. Do all that. And we'll have a show out soon. So hopefully we get to talk again in the future. And good luck with all your endeavors and homesteading in Central Texas. I know there's a lot of really great people out there. So awesome. Cheers. Thank you. We appreciate
it. Thanks for having me.
All right. Peace. Peace, guys. Bye.
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I'm not signed on to killing all those old people, all those black babies. Fuck you, motherfucking New World Order. I will get your ass. Delay that. It pisses me off. You sign on to playing God, you get burned. And all you dumbasses that serve the New World Order, idiots, playing God all day, deciding who lives and who dies.
Penis man.
And then I find out they're all screwing little kids and devil worshiping. Of course they are. Oh, you're the big elites. Oprah Winfrey and Ted Turner and Bill Clinton and Epstein, all in that seven-story pervert building in New York. What a bunch of freaks. And the fact that those pedophiles, and I'm calling Oprah Winfrey one, hope she burns in hell. Every damn one of you's a piece of crap. And you're going to be judged. So you just continue to enjoy hurting babies and hurting old people and hurting homeless people and turn us all into a bunch of idiots. Because you will be destroyed.
Mom, I'm transgender.